Thank you, Tim. What I'm going to talk about tonight is, or what I want to get through in the next hour and 45 minutes, for as long as we have, is to try to get us to the point where you can walk out and maybe even kind of thoroughly grasp the difference between the people who make money consistently in this business, the difference between the pros and everyone else, the consistent winners. Because there are some very dramatic differences. Most of you probably think or assume that those differences have to do with what the pros or the consistent winners know about the markets. And I'm not implying, nor am I going to say, that people who win consistently don't have a good grasp of market knowledge, because they normally do. But it isn't necessary to be a consistent winner. What they have is a good grasp of themselves. And I'm not saying that every consistent winner has a good grasp of themselves in a sense where, they've gone through years of analysis or anything else like that. But there are certain characteristics, there are certain attributes, and most importantly, there are certain fundamental, let's say, principles in the way that they think. As a matter of fact, if I were to say that there is one characteristic, just from a general perspective, of the difference between the consistent winners and everyone else, it's simply in the way the consistent winners think. They think very differently than everyone else. They approach trading from a very different perspective. I say different perspective. It isn't a perspective that you're not aware of. It really isn't. This is not a perspective that you don't have some awareness of to some degree or another. But it's how well you've integrated the kind of perspectives that I'm going to talk about in a moment into your mental environment so that they become functional. Essentially, the big difference between, when I say, they think differently, essentially the biggest difference is that the consistent winners think in probabilities. That's it. They think in probabilities. But the problem here is that thinking in probabilities has some very profound psychological implications. Very profound. And all of us in this room are certainly aware of the nature of probabilities. There probably isn't anyone who doesn't understand something about it. But it's how, like I said, it's how well you've integrated these principles and how deep they reside in your mental environment as a belief system that will determine how well you will be able to use your market analysis. Because no matter how good of an analyst you become, you will never be able to use your analysis to the fullest capability of it or even yourself until you can trade without fear. Until you can trade from a carefree state of mind. I'm going to qualify that and say a carefree state of mind with a foundation of absolute trust in yourself. And what do I mean by trust in yourself? That you always act in your own best interest every time without hesitation and without internal conflict. Otherwise, you're always going to be susceptible to certain typical errors that will erode or detract from your ability to be consistent. The kind of errors that if you were to just look at your equity or make a thorough analysis of your last trades, your last 20 trades, 30 trades, 100 trades, no matter what, and if you could take out the kind of errors where you didn't define your risk in advance of getting in a trade, where you didn't execute a losing trade when the market gave you an indication that that was a losing trade, even if you did decide to define your risk in advance. But if you didn't, or jumping the gun, getting in too soon, getting in too late, not taking any profits on a winning trade, or letting a winning trade go into a loser. Now, those are the typical errors that the typical trader makes all the time. Take those errors away, and you can take even the most rudimentary system, trading system or methodology, and make consistent money with good money management principles. Take those errors away and you will become consistent winners. Maybe just marginally consistent, but you will become consistent. So why do you make the errors? Why do you think? Anybody got any ideas? Because you don't think in probabilities. That's why. You haven't integrated these kinds of principles in your mental environment at a functional level. And so that's really what I want to get at, you know, in the amount of time that we have left, is I want you to leave with really kind of a, you're not going to have a thorough understanding of it, but at least you're going to understand it to the point that if you're not thinking of probabilities, that you might think about pursuing a path in which you start to learn or start to think, you know, like this is what's going to make me consistent by integrating these fundamental principles in my mental system. So what I want to talk about first is I want to really start this out by looking at the market. And let's look at the various characteristics. I mean, let's look at really what the market environment is all about. Because essentially what I'm saying is that what we want to do is we want to align our beliefs and our attitudes with the environment which we're operating in. Simply say it in a different way is that our goals, our wants, our needs, our desires all generate from within. Do they not? Okay? We formulate our goals. We understand maybe to one degree or another our needs. We have wants. We have desires. And in essence, what that does is that they formulate into expectations. And really, an expectation is simply our mental representation of what some future moment in the environment, in the external environment, not the interior. I've got a mental representation of what some future moment in the exterior environment is either going to look like, sound like, taste like, feel like, or smell like. And so if the environment shows up exactly the way I expect it to, how do I feel? Universally, everyone feels a sense of satisfaction, correct? And the degree to which the environment shows up the way we expect it to will be the degree to which we're satisfied. Is everybody with me on this? I need some nods. I need some feedback, okay? I really do. You guys are sitting there like, you know, God, just give me some feedback. It's all right. It really is, okay?
Yes, yes.
Thank you. Okay.
Hallelujah.
Jeez, man. You guys are making this hard. And so what we do, so in other words, if I have certain needs that I want to fulfill, and these needs are going to be fulfilled in the environment, it's going to cause me to take a certain set of steps. It's going to cause me to take a certain set of steps. So in other words, I'm implying there's a process involved. Maybe a short process, but there's a process. And the set of steps that I take will be determined by what I believe about what works. So essentially, I'm working out of my belief systems. In other words, whatever I've learned to believe about what works is going to cause me to act or behave in a way that's consistent with my beliefs to fulfill my goals. Again, are you guys with me? Okay? Okay. So what we want to do is we want to look at the market environment in a way so that we can understand, we'll dissect and analyze the market environment so that we can understand what beliefs we need to interact with that environment in a satisfying way. Instead of feeling frustration all the way to extreme exasperation. Because in essence, if you're frustrated, meaning that if you can perceive more in the market than what you're making or what you're experiencing in your bottom line, in other words, you've learned a lot about the markets, you've learned about methodologies, you've learned how to identify an edge, you've learned how to determine when to buy and when to sell, but lo and behold, you know, what you perceive as available in any given moment or any given day or any given week isn't anywhere near what you're ending up with on the bottom line. Why is that? Why can you perceive more available than what you can end up with? You think it might have something to do with the market. And when I'm saying it has nothing to do with the market at all. Nothing. You think it may have everything to do with the market. I'm saying it has nothing to do with the market. It has to do with what's going on inside your mind and the perspective and the attitudes that you're approaching your trading from. So in essence, what we want to do is we want to be able to approach the market, in other words, take a particular set of steps that result in a sense of satisfaction. So is everybody with me? So if we're going to take those, if we're going to take those steps, we got to determine what it is about the environment, about the market environment. So how the market environment exists so that we can formulate what those set of steps are. So the first thing we're going to do is just is just determine that all price movement is a function of what people believe about the future. Now think about this. All price movement is a function of what people believe about the future. What are the implications? Well, first of all, let's establish why that exists that way. Why this is a principal characteristic of the way the market exists. Think about what price movement is. How do prices move? At the most fundamental level, what causes prices to move? Now think about everyone. Everyone in this market trades. We're all participating in the market. What's that? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Good, that's a good answer. The gentleman back there said that prices move as a result of an imbalance between supply and demand. Now that can be said just a little bit differently. I'm going to say essentially the same thing you said, only with different words. Just simply an imbalance between people who believe that the market's going up as opposed to the people who believe it's going down. Because you think about it this way. Regardless of all the reasons that people might give you about why they trade, all those reasons have to formulate down to really one reason. There's only one reason, really, that anybody trades. And the reason why we know that there's only one reason why anybody trades is because there's only two outcomes to any trade. No matter what trade you put on, no matter how complicated it is, how convoluted it is, there's still only two outcomes. And what are they? You're going to be a winner or you're going to be a loser. You're going to make money or you're going to lose money. And so we can assume that based on the fact that there are only two outcomes, we can assume that everyone wants to be a winner. Everyone puts on a trade because they want to make money. Now, what happens? Okay, how does that make prices move? Well, there's only two ways to make money. Two ways. You have to buy at a price and sell it back higher, at a higher price, or sell at a price and buy it back lower. So now we have only two ways to make money. So keep in mind, if there's only two ways to make money, to buy low and sell high and buy low, what is going to cause someone, if the last price, if for those people who trade the bonds, for an example, if the last price in bonds was 09, who's going to pay 10? In other words, if this is the last price that represents value, what's low? What is low? 8, right? What is high? 10. But for prices to move, someone has to buy at 10. Someone has to actually bid it up and be willing to do the exact opposite. Now think about this. Be willing to do the exact opposite of what they need to do to make money in that moment. In that moment, low is 8. In that moment, low is 9. Now he's willing to pay 10. Why is someone willing to pay 10? There's only one reason. What is that reason? Because he believes that he can sell it at 11 or higher. If he thought he could buy it at 9 or 8, he would have waited. Correct? Why is someone going to sell at 8 when high is 9 or 10? What? He thinks it's going the other way. In other words, so what's price movement a function of? Yeah. All price movement is a function of what people believe about the future. It's that simple. So what do we have? All the charts that we have, all the ways that we represent market information, the hundreds of thousands of ways, maybe the infinite number of ways that we can massage market information, it all boils down to two things, really. We have two fundamental forces that exist in the market. Two forces. And what are they? The people who believe it's going up and the people who believe it's going down. And when there's a significant imbalance between the two, prices move in the direction of wherever there's the most force. Wherever there's the most conviction in belief. Correct? Okay? So basically, when we're looking at the market, and we're trying to take advantage of the market, and we're trying to find that edge, what are we really trying to do? We're trying to find that imbalance, right? So we're dealing with people. In essence, we're dealing with people, and we're dealing with people's beliefs about the future. Now, when we look at the market, in any given moment, what does that tell us? That tells us in that moment what people believe and who's got the power. Right? Okay? And any technical system can measure that in any particular way. So we've got these two forces. But we have a third force, don't we? Don't we have a third force in the market? Two primary forces? What's that third force? The people that are waiting at the sidelines. The people who haven't made up their minds. Who can come in at any given time. Right? And we don't know what side they're going to come in on, do we? Is there any technical system that can tell us what side the traders who are waiting on the sideline are going to come in on? Anybody in this room who can give me a technical system that can tell me what side the unknown forces, the people that are waiting on the sidelines, what side they're going to come in on? The people who believe it's going up or the people who believe it's going down? Anybody in the room? Have you heard anything this weekend that would indicate that? Yes or no?
No.
So what are the implications? No, every trader is a variable. Every single person who participates in the market is a market variable. Maybe a small one, maybe an insignificant one, but nonetheless a variable. Where no technical system can take everyone in consideration. There are some important psychological implications here we're going to get to. Until you can read everyone's mind, you will never really know what will happen next. Now, we're getting to the kind of the crux of what I'm talking about here. Because remember the errors that I mentioned? And I'll put those up in a second. Remember all those errors that I mentioned? They're all essentially the result of, at one level or another, you believing you know what's going to happen next. You see, and until you can read everyone's mind or have that capability, you don't know what's going to happen next. And this is what really separates. This is what really separates the pros from everyone else. They don't indulge themselves into thinking that they know what's going to happen next. But this is very difficult. This usually takes losing most everything you own or losing, you know, let's say several major stakes, trading stakes that you have, before you might come to the conclusion that you don't need to know what's going to happen next to make money. There's some very powerful mental forces at work here. They're not only powerful mental forces in terms of what we've learned to believe, but also in essence in the way our minds are wired. Our minds are not wired. Meaning, when I say wired, I mean like hardwired, like the motherboard of a computer. Okay, you've got software. You can put any software in to make that computer function a lot of different ways. But it has a chip that's hardwired to function in certain ways. And what I'm saying, we're going to get into in a moment, that our minds are not wired to think in probabilities. As a matter of fact, they're wired almost just the opposite. And so, therefore, it takes an enormous amount of belief, meaning to integrate into your mental system what it means to think in probabilities to overcome these natural mental forces. And that's why, as easy as trading looks, as easy as it looks, as close as you always seem to be to that pot of gold, it just never really materializes, making it truly one of the hardest things you'll ever do. Until you get the right attitudes. Until you get the right perspective. See, you have to think and act in ways that always honor these unknown forces. Now you can say, Mark, I know that. I think I know that anyway. But then again, if you're saying that right now, I would ask you to raise your hand if even lately you've put on a trade without predefining your risk. Is there anybody in the room who would never, ever consider putting on a trade without having predefined their risk first? That's one of the biggest errors you can make, not predefining your risk. It is the most fundamental error that almost all traders make. And why would you not do it? You see, if there are unknown forces in that market where you never really know what's going to happen, you got people on the sideline that are going to weigh in on one side or another, and there's no way you can know for sure what side they're going to weigh in on, why in the world would you get into a situation where you didn't at least decide in advance what the market has to look like, what the market has to sound like, what the market has to feel like to tell you that this trade isn't going to work or isn't working? Why would you do that to yourself? And yet you do it over and over again. And you would think this was, it's not the first time you're hearing this. Every single one of you have been to workshops, have read books, and every single one of them say the same thing. What do you need to do? Predefine your risk. Why do you think you won't do it? Because the typical trader won't get into a trade until he's convinced himself that he's right. And see, if I'm right, there is no risk. Correct? If I'm right, there's no risk. So why do I have to predefine it? Because see, if I go through the process of predefining the risk, in essence, what am I doing? I'm gathering evidence to suggest that this trade won't work. Am I not? And then again, I might gather so much evidence, I might not put it on. And then if I don't put it on and it becomes a winner, oh, I'm in real agony now. So to prevent that from happening, what do? I just decide, well, I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't think I was right. So because I'm doing it, I must be right. So therefore, there's no risk. In other words, you've convinced yourself you know what's going to happen next. And do you? So does that mean all of you are going to walk out of here and, you know, and on Monday or Tuesday when you start trading again, never ever consider not predefining your risk before you get into a trade? Maybe some of you will. See, basically, what we have is a situation of a probabilistic mindset consisting of five fundamental truths. And these truths have to be integrated into your mental system, like I said, at the very core of your trading personality. That anything can happen. Is that true or not? Every moment in the market is unique. Now, this creates a real paradox for us. This is very, very difficult. And this is where our minds are fundamentally wired not to allow us to believe that every moment in the market is really unique. There are some trading paradoxes here that have to get resolved at a mental level. Real tough ones. And this is it. When we study the markets, what are we really doing? We're trying to find patterns, are we not? In other words, we're trying to find patterns in the collective human behavior. Individuals act in characteristic ways over and over and over again, and their behavior becomes predictable. Groups of individuals interacting with one another will also create behavior patterns. What does a pattern imply? A consistent outcome. Patterns imply consistent outcomes. But the problem, and here's what really makes it difficult, is that you can use the exact same set of variables. So in other words, you can take market data and you can measure it, you can quantify it, you can do it mathematically, you can do it mechanically, and the variables that you're using to identify these patterns can show up exactly in this now moment as it did in some previous moment. Implying that this now moment is identical to the previous moment. Implying that. Because all the variables are exactly the same. The mathematical equations come out exactly the same. But is this moment identical? Absolutely not. Even though it may look exactly the same, it's still a unique moment. And why do we know it's a unique moment? Why do we know that? Why do we know that for a fact? What? You don't have the same people. You don't have the same people. In other words, if I just draw a little congestion area right in here, The market's coming down to support. This may look almost exactly the same as this, 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 and this, but yet, do I know if the people that came into the market, that the buyers that came into the market right here and absorbed all this selling pressure to cause this to happen, and they came back in here, do I know if these same people are coming back into the market? Do I know that? No, I do not. But yet, if I really don't know that, and if I believe that I don't know it, then there's no way that I'd consider getting into this trade without saying, how much room have I got to give the market to tell me that they either are or they are not coming back in? That's my risk. The distance I give these people to show their hand is the financial risk of the trade. Now, that principle works in every single trade you're going to put on. And if you say you believe it, why won't you define your risk in advance? Because our minds don't let us think of it that way. Our minds are wired not to let us think of it that way. And we literally have to train our minds to think of it differently. We have to train our minds to think of it more like where we are right now, like in Las Vegas. Because see, what we have is we have a market, an entity, let's say, that gives us these patterns that can be very symmetrical, that repeat themselves over and over and over again, but the outcome to each individual pattern is what? In relationship to the last time the pattern showed up. The outcome is what? Random. There's a random distribution between wins and losses on any given set of variables that define an edge. And I'm defining an edge as simply a set of variables that tell you when there's a higher probability of one thing happening over another. An edge is simply when your variables are telling you that there's a higher probability of one thing happening over another. So all I'm really saying here is that there's a higher probability of the market going up than going down. That's all this is all about. There's simply a higher probability. And every time this pattern shows up, if what I need to risk, or what the potential to make money on this trade is at least 2.5 to 3 times more than what I need to risk, that's all I got to consider right here. This is it. Like my risk reward ratio is 2.5 or 3 to 1, then I've got a good trade. I don't have to know what's going to happen next. I just have to know there's a higher probability of one thing happening over another, and that my risk to find out, the dollar value to find out if that trade's going to work, is maybe a third of the profit potential, if it does work. And if that's the case, if I can identify a pattern like that, and if that's the case, do I have to win even 60 or 70% of the time? I don't even have to win 60 or 70% of the time. I can actually win less than 50% of the time and still be a consistent winner. This is all that it's about right here. It's that simple. Except for some money management principles that you have to take into consideration and learning how to take profits. It's not that simple, actually. But, okay, here's the problem. It's like, look at this. We're in I've been told, the biggest hotel in the world. And yesterday I was over at Bellagio, okay? $1.3 billion for a hotel. Now think about the implications. Think about the people who proposed spending $1.3 billion on a building to attract people to an event to play a game that has a purely random outcome. Each individual hand of blackjack, each spin of the roulette wheel, each roll of the dice, random outcome in relationship to the last outcome. Right? But yet, what? Hold on. I'm not talking about who's got the odds, what odds are in whose favor. I'm talking about simply, strictly looking at it from the perspective that, you know, you've got one event to the next, you've got random outcomes, a random distribution between wins and losses. And yet casinos make consistent money. Think about it. Casinos make consistent money on an event that has a random outcome. How can they do that? Because they don't sit there and fret over every single little hand. They know that they've got the odds in their favor. They, based on the rules that they set up to play the game. So you take into consideration all the big winners, take into consideration all the big losers, and everybody in between. But when it all shakes out, on blackjack, they're going to end up with, I guess, 4.5% of all the money that's wagered at a blackjack table. So you figure $1 million is being wagered in any given time period, they're going to end up with $45,000, 45 per million. So what you end up having to have, and this is what makes it so difficult and paradoxical, you need a two-tiered belief system that seems to contradict each other. You see, at the macro level, at the large level, when you look at your trades, you have to look at your trades at let's say, a sample size of trades, a large enough sample that you can, let's say, well, you've got a large enough sample to indicate to you how well your methodology is working, and that if it works well and you've got sufficient risk-to-reward ratios, you will come out with a consistent outcome. That's at the macro level. But see, at the micro level, the each individual trade by trade, there's a random distribution between wins and losses. So any given methodology that you have, the variables that you use to define that methodology, if I said to you, hey, if you're going to take the next 25 trades or the next 30 trades, could you tell me in advance which ones were going to be the winners and which ones were going to be the losers? You couldn't, right? So what would that imply? What would that imply as a trader that you're going to have to do? What are you going to have to do now? If you don't know in advance which ones are the winners and the losers, doesn't that require you to take every trade? Doesn't it? So why won't you do it? Why do you think you won't do it? Because one, you really don't believe it. Because you haven't instituted into your mental system this two-tiered paradoxical belief system that overpowers your mind's natural inclination to associate. Because here's what'll happen. And what I mean by associate is simply our minds will take what's happening in this now moment. Now think about this. Our minds just automatically take what's happening in this now moment, and if there's anything in our brain that's already similar, in other words, it looks, sounds, or feels the same as something that's already been cataloged in our minds automatically associate the two, meaning the now moment and our memories, and then make them one, meaning make them identical. So in essence, we think we know what's happening based on our memories. But see, every moment is really unique. Is it not? We think we know what's happening based on our memories. And so what ends up happening is that it flips us into a certain state of mind, a state of mind that's consistent with the memories that we got tapped into. So, for an example, if I'm looking at this methodology and consistently over time, I know that, let's say, I'm going to get 75% winning trades or 50% winning trades. It doesn't really make any difference. And I'm looking at a set of trades where, you know, the first one's a winner, and the second one's a winner, and the third one's a loser, and the fourth one's a loser, the fifth one's a loser. Now, my methodology is identifying the next edge. The next edge has now appeared in the market, okay? I'm on trade number 6, the next edge. Now, we've just established, hopefully, that every moment in the market is unique, have we not? And why do we know that? Because the same people that created the last edge, the same people that, and it only takes, again, I didn't even put to point this out, that it only takes one person in the world, think about this every time you put on a trade, it only takes one person in the world to negate the outcome of your edge. Think about it. Just one trader, that's all it takes. One trader to negate the outcome of the way you define an edge. That's all it takes. So, in this particular case, you know, what's happened here is that even though the variables are absolutely identical, the people behind the variables are not. And I've got unknown forces in operation. I don't know how everyone's gonna weigh in on this deal. And so therefore, do I know what's going to happen next? No, I don't. But what does my mind tell me? Yes, I do. Yes, I do know what's going to happen next. I know that's gonna be a loser. I know it. That's what my mind tells me. Why? Because my mind is automatically associating this now moment opportunity with this, this, and this. And it taps me into the feeling of losing those last three trades. And once I get tapped into the feeling of losing those last three trades, it fills my mind and my body with negative energy. So instead of feeling confident, and in essence, a confidence is like an absence of fear, and when we're in a state of confidence, we can step into an experience, can we not? In other words, when we're confident, in the degree to which we're confident, it allows us to just step into the experience, step into the environment. Because we feel like we can handle whatever the environment is confronting us with. But now if I'm feeling fear, what do? I withdraw, I close down, or I'm ready to run or fight. And see, that's my reality in that moment, because that's the way I feel. That's the energy that's flowing into my body, regardless of what the reality from the market's perspective is. The reality from the market's perspective is that this is a unique experience. And there's a random distribution between wins and losses. So if I'm going to do this correctly and learn to trust myself and operate in this environment in a way where I can do what I need to do to create consistent results, then I better get a mechanism to be able to do this, to be able to put that trade on. And not hesitate, not try to talk myself out of it. Because if you don't put it on and it turns out to be a winner, you're going to feel worse than if you put it on and it turned out to be a loser. And why do we feel worse? Think about this. Think about this phenomena. Why do we feel worse when we don't put on a trade that turned out to be a winner as opposed to putting on a trade that turned out to be a loser? I'm not saying putting on losing trades doesn't feel bad, but all I'm saying is that why do we usually feel worse? Anybody know why that phenomena exists? What?
We didn't even have the opportunity.
We didn't have the opportunity?
By not taking the trade.
No, just the opposite, actually. Let me think about this. Go ahead. You didn't believe in yourself. That's painful. Okay, anybody else?
You felt like you had the edge, and then you let it pass.
Okay, in other words, think of it this way. When we put on a trade that turns out to be a loser, if we haven't taken complete responsibility for what we end up with in the markets, in other words, from my perspective, I look at the markets as being like this never-ending opportunity flow. If you're involved with liquid markets, you can look at the markets as simply a never-ending opportunity flow that's always giving each one of us the opportunity to get in, to add to a position, to detract from position, or get out. So if those conditions exist, the ability to do that, then you can say that whatever you end up with the market at the end of any given trade has to be the result of the process by which you define and interpret information and your ability to act on it, which means it's all our responsibility. The problem is that in a losing trade, there's all kinds of ways that we can shift the responsibility to make it less painful. Right? There's all kinds of ways we can shift that responsibility to make it less painful. You know, well, gee, there's another variable here I wasn't taking into consideration. And if I just learn that one, I can prevent that from happening again. So you feel a little bit better about yourself, you see. But in a winning trade or a trade that would have been a winner that you didn't take, you see, the market didn't do anything but give you exactly what you wanted. And you can't shift the responsibility. You can't make that go away. The market did exactly what you thought, exactly what you wanted. And who can you blame? Nobody. That's what makes it more painful. That's what causes that phenomenon. So in other words, what I'm saying here is that you've got to take that trade. You have to have the kind of mindset that allows you to step into that experience. Or otherwise you're making a trading error. Otherwise, you're not interacting with this environment in a way that you can create satisfaction. You're going to create frustration. Take just the opposite. What if the first two were losers? Winner, winner, winner. Now what's going to happen? What? Go ahead. Yeah, well, overconfidence, right? Not just confidence. Yeah, let's double up. Let's triple up. Why? Why would we do that? Why would we violate our money management principles, assuming that we have any? What's that?
I said that's the first question.
Yeah. Yeah, why would we? Well, yeah, but greedy. Okay, we heard greedy. But what's behind the greed? What's behind it? Come on. We believe we know what's going to happen. You see, our mind automatically associated this now moment opportunity, which is unique. This is a unique moment right here in and of itself. And it associated it with the last three trades, putting us and tapping into those memories. Those memories now flood our mind and body with this great feeling. In some cases, it can be euphoria. And euphoria is really dangerous as a trader. I mean, if you think about it, you can live in a state of continuous joy throughout your life. It would be like heaven on earth, right? That's what euphoria feels like. But there's a problem. You can be living in your mind in heaven on earth, but you're still interacting in an environment of cause and effect. And the market's a dangerous place to be when you're in a state of euphoria. Real dangerous. Why? Because euphoria puts you in a state of mind where you have zero inability to perceive the risk. You cannot perceive risk in a state of euphoria. Meaning that, as far as you're concerned, nothing can touch you. Nothing bad can happen. And that's where the most serious damage is done as traders. Is when we're in this state of bliss. We're in this mental state of bliss. And the market doesn't cooperate. And the problem here is that since we are susceptible to overtrading, we'll put on two or three times the number of contracts we normally trade. Well, then what's going to happen? The market just has to come back a little bit. You see, when we got, we're only trading three contracts, now we're up to 9 or 10 or 20, the market just has to come back against you just a little bit to really hurt you. And since you knew for a fact, an absolute fact, I mean, in the word absolute, you knew for an absolute fact that nothing could go wrong, it really hurts. It really, really hurts. And why are we susceptible to this? Are we learning why we're susceptible to it? Because we have not integrated these principles into our mental environment in a way or sufficiently enough to counteract the effects of these natural mental forces. Are you guys with me on this? Are you following me? So let's look at some of these typical errors again. Now, you see, what's going to happen is that all these errors, now if you can see, now all these errors are going to be the result of what? There's basically four, they correspond with four fears that you're going to be operating out of. That's a fear of losing money, the fear of being wrong, the fear of missing out, and the fear of leaving money on the table. And they are all the result of thinking that you know what's going to happen next in a probabilistic environment. In other words, our minds are telling us that this now moment exists like some memory in my past, whether it's recent or far away, it doesn't really make any difference. And therefore, I know what's going to happen. Otherwise, how could I ever hesitate and get in too late? The market gives me a signal to get into the market. What's going to cause me to hesitate? Well, come on, what?
Here.
Yeah. In other words, I'm tapping into some recent memory that's maybe telling me that, well, this might not work. Well, how do you know that? You don't, really, do you? And what about the same thing, jumping the gun? Well, gee, since I know for a fact the market's going to go in my favor, why wait till I actually get the signal? Why wait? Why? I know what's going to happen. I don't need to wait. I'll get in now. I'll beat everybody to the punch. You don't define your risk of putting on a trade. The biggest error you'll ever make. Again, why would you do it? If you believed in the characteristics of a probabilistic environment, how could you do that? Or define your risk in advance, put your stop in the market, but take your stop out and let the market even go further against you. Anybody in the room who hasn't done that? Well, we got one guy. That's good. That's good. I like that. Or get out of a winning trade too soon and leave money on the table. That's a tough one. That's probably one of the most difficult to learn, even after you've integrated all the rest of them. Because you really have to operate out of a principle that, you know, where you can kind of scale out of your positions and always give yourself money as the market makes it available. Because you never really know when it's going to come back on you. But the reason why you won't take profits, why won't you take profits? Think about it. Why won't you take profits? Yeah, you know you're going to get more. You know. That doesn't mean you have to get out of the whole position, but you can take something off. And see, think about it this way. By not taking something off, you're really reinforcing the fact that you know for sure. Because if you believe that you didn't know, you'd be compelled to take some off. That's the difference. You'd feel compelled to do it. Or let a winning trade turn into a loser without having taken any profits. Or like I said, move a stop closer to your entry point. Get stopped out, and then the market goes back into your favor. Oh, again, the result of thinking that we know what's going to happen next. Go ahead. That gets into the technical stuff that I mean, not every speaker, but most of the speakers here are talking about market analysis and market structure. So how you define that risk point is based on your understanding of the market. And you know, I'd be covering ground that I really don't have time to cover to answer that question, okay? The question was, how do I specifically define the risk in the market? I think that's what you said, right? Okay. So, what we need to understand here is we need to understand that the market does not generate inherently painful or pleasurable information as an inherent characteristic of the way that it exists. Now think about this. The market does not generate inherently painful or pleasurable information as an inherent characteristic of the way that it exists. Does anybody want to disagree with that? What does the market generate then? At the most fundamental level, the market simply generates upticks and downticks. That's all. Just upticks and downticks. Upticks and downticks that form into patterns. Are they happy upticks? Or sad upticks? Yeah, miserable upticks? Okay? See, the environment... The external environment can generate inherently painful information. Can it not? There could be people hurling insults at us with the express intent of tapping into something inside of us that would cause us to experience emotional pain. That, in that case, the environment is generating inherently painful information. And the environment can also generate information that's inherently pleasurable. Someone, let's say that, you know, who's very fond and affectionate towards us will be generating information that would want us also to feel the same way they do. That's inherently pleasurable information. Now, that doesn't mean that we can interpret the information that way, because someone can be hurling insults at us, and if they're doing it with words that we don't really know the meaning of, well, you know, it just goes right over our head. In the same way with people who are generating, let's say, inherently pleasurable information. We may not interpret it that way, even though that was the intent. So what am I getting at here? I'm getting at the way we interpret information is a function of what? And how we feel about it is a function of what? Our beliefs. The beliefs we're operating out of at any given moment. So really what I'm saying here is you start integrating a belief system that of these principles that I had here about probabilities, you are going to take trading out of a right or wrong, win or lose context. What we don't want is we don't want our trading activities to tap us into what it means to be right or wrong. Because everyone learns what it means to be wrong painfully. So that's painful for everybody. We all may have different definitions of what it means to be wrong, but whatever those definitions are, it doesn't make any difference. It's pain. Now, if I'm putting on a trade where I think I know what's going to happen next, I'm operating out of a belief that I think I know what's going to happen next because I'm such a great analyst, and I can read people's minds, and the market doesn't do what I think it should do or it's going to do, does that have the potential to tap me into emotional pain? Yes, it does. Now I am not perceiving the information any longer from an objective perspective. My mind will automatically, as a natural characteristic of the way that it functions, help me avoid that painful information. Our minds are wired to avoid pain, both physical pain and emotional pain. Emotional pain is information pain, is information-based pain. In other words, physical pain comes from our contact with, let's say, another physical object that, you know, can cause pain, right? Emotional pain is our contact with information. So if I have the potential to define these neutral up and down ticks, and that's all they are, they're simply neutral up and down ticks. That's it. There's no pain associated with them really at all. From the market's perspective, there's no pain. They're just neutral up and down ticks. How do they all of a sudden become painful and pleasurable ticks? How is it all of a sudden that, you know, we look at the market and you know, this information has the potential to cause me to feel euphoric, and this information has the potential to cause me to feel horrible? It's how I interpret the information. And how I interpret the information is based on what I believe. Now, if I believe that every moment is unique, if I believe that there's a random distribution between wins and losses, then it really doesn't have anything to do with being right or wrong, does it? If I asked you to flip a coin and call the flip, if you're wrong, does it tap you into all the accumulated pain of every time you've been wrong in your life? No, it doesn't. You want to know why it doesn't? Because you believe that the outcome is random, that you're not responsible. And it's the same way with trading. You can put on a trade based on how you define an edge, but the outcome is random, and you're not responsible. And so if you believe that the outcome is random, it helps you take it out of this right or wrong context. Because if you don't, this is where traders have, you know, have the typical trader, not the pros, not the consistent winners, will take any given trade and basically live and die on the outcome of this next trade. And the reason why is because it has the potential to tap us into all the accumulated pain that we have of being wrong throughout our whole lives. It isn't just this one trade. It means a whole lot more than that. That's why, so when this sixth trade comes up right here, that's why it's so tough to put on. From the market's perspective, again, random outcome. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know what my risk is, and if I can afford the risk, if I can afford the dollar value of that risk, why am I not putting the trade on? Because if I'm still looking at it from a right or wrong perspective, it will tap me into all the accumulated pain of every time I've been wrong in my life. And so basically, so in essence, it makes it extremely difficult for you to learn to use what you've learned about the market. Unless you can make yourself right all the time. And then that's what traders typically do. They learn as much as they can about the market simply to avoid the risk. They're not accepting the risk. They're learning about the market to avoid the risk. And see, when you've learned to accept the risk, you will take trading out of a pain context. Because what does acceptance mean? It means completely reconciling. There's a reconciliation. It means that there isn't any part of you that argues for something different. It means the dollar value of that trade is whatever it is, I'm fine with it. If I lose it, I lose it. I'm fine with it. And therefore, it shouldn't resonate the slightest bit of emotional discomfort. And I guarantee you that you will not be able to use whatever you've learned about the market in any effective way until you get to the point where you can put on and take off a trade, whether it's a winner or a loser, without resonating the slightest bit of emotional discomfort. And the way that you've got to do that is to learn to think about it more like the professionals. It's simply a probability game. That's all it is. It really isn't any different than flipping a coin. The only difference is you've got the edge. You. And how good of an edge you have is based on how good of an analyst you are, how good your variables are. But you don't need to be that good to be consistent. You just need to be consistent at executing your edge. Which brings up another point. Most traders, they want to be consistent. They would say they want to be consistent. They would say that that's their objective. If I asked for a raise of hands, would anybody in the room not raise your hand if I said you wanted consistency in your results? Who would not raise their hand? And yet I probably venture to say that most of you trade randomly. What do I mean by that? Anybody want any guesses on what I mean by trading randomly? Yeah, you don't have a consistent methodology. You don't do the same thing under the same set of circumstances for at least a good enough period of time or enough trades to determine what works and what doesn't. You want consistent results, and yet you think you're going to get it trading randomly. Does that make sense? So not only do you not find out what works and what doesn't work in the market, you can't make a determination as to whether or not your system isn't working or whether or not you're not working. Meaning that, you know, there are psychological issues involved that are detracting from your results, or whether it's really just your variables. So what I do with the traders that I work with is I have them go through a process where they trade mechanically, meaning that most traders that get into trading at some point, they might try to trade mechanically but find it extremely difficult to do, find it extremely difficult to come up with a mechanical set of variables, and there are some good reasons why that's so difficult. But they're trading beyond their level, meaning that what you need to do is you need to get to a point where you take a given set of variables, make them as rigid as possible, and attempt to execute those variables in the market and do it to a point where you can do it without any hesitation or internal argument. Meaning that what you do is you trade in sample sizes, and I like sample sizes of 20 or 25 trades, and so instead of taking the next trade, you say, look, instead of taking, oh, I'll take the next trade, you commit yourself to taking the next 20 trades. In other words, I'm going to use the same set of variables for the next 20 trades. And before you do that, you're certainly going to know what your risk is on each one of those trades. And basically, you should do it at a level, even if it means trading mini contracts, to do it at a level so that if you took 20 losing trades in a row, you can afford it. The chances of that happening are extremely remote, even with the worst methodologies. But what I'm saying is that you accept the risk in advance of every single trade so that you can go through a process of taking every trade in that sample size. Because what you need to do is you need to confront these situations. You need to confront that sixth trade. You need to convince yourself that every moment's unique and there's a random distribution between wins and losses. And only creating the experience of it will you learn to actually convince yourself of it. And what I mean by that is that when you get to this point, the sixth trade, everything in your rational mind is going to scream saying, no, 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 don't put that trade on. And then you've got to think, well, what's my objective here? What am I trying to accomplish? See, before you'd say, well, I want to make money. But what I'm saying is that instead of trying to make money, why don't you try to learn how to think about trading in a way so that you can make money, so that the money just flows into your account as a natural consequence of the way that you think. And so if you look at your trading from that perspective, putting on this next trade might be a little bit easier because you've got a specific objective in mind. I've already accepted the risk. I've already said I could lose on all 20 trades, so why am I not doing it? I've got to do it anyway. I know this is hard, but I've got to do it anyway. I've got to put this trade on. And then when you put that trade on and it turns out to be a winner, what have you done? You've actually created an experience that completely contradicts what you believed. You with me on this? You've created an experience that is in contradiction with what you believed going into that experience. And therefore, you start breaking down your old beliefs. You start breaking down your old beliefs about what trading is really all about. Because if you think trading is about work, if you think trading is about analysis, if you think trading is about focusing on the money, if you think trading is about trying to find out what's going to happen next, you've got big problems. And you'll always have big problems because you'll always be susceptible to making those kind of errors that we just talked about. So what you want to do is step into a process whereby you actually want to confront these specific kinds of situations so that you break down your beliefs so you can start operating out of new beliefs. Beliefs that are more functional. Remember we started this whole thing saying that my desires, you know, generate from within and the set of steps that I take is a result of what I believe about what will work? Well, if you're not creating consistency, then at some point you have to think that maybe the beliefs I'm operating out of don't work too well. Which means you're going to have to change your beliefs. And this is typically why it takes losing everything for most people to break through the threshold to finally become consistent. Why do you think there's that common thread between just about all the traders that have made it in this business? Why do you think that common thread exists? Because it took that kind of, you know, traumatic, cataclysmic experience in their lives to finally break down their beliefs about what trading is all about. You don't have to go through that. But you have to make up your mind as to what you want. If you want to create the right kind of mindset, then you're going to have to create a process that creates that kind of mindset. Otherwise, you won't get it. This is an awfully quiet crowd. Yeah, doesn't work. Okay. Any questions about what I just said? Go ahead. Absolutely. What? Go ahead. Uh-huh. Well, what I'm... I'm not sure about what you're asking me. So say it again.
The question is about systematic variables.
Uh-huh.
Because you need to step back and reevaluate your methodology. You've got 10 losing trades. When do you start? I mean, you say just get in the... Just break that fear there.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that, see, what you need to do, see, if you're going to do this from a really, really methodical approach, you want to limit the number of trades that you say you're going to take. In other words, you want to limit your sample size, you know, in a reasonable way for exactly the reason that you're talking about. In other words, you know, what you've got, when you take a limited, you know, a rigid set of variables that you're overlaying on an event that is very fluid, see, I've got something rigid, I'm overlaying on an event that's very fluid, right? There are certain, you know, certain time periods you could say that those particular rigid variables will mesh very well with with the way the market is moving, and in other times that it won't. And so what you want to do is you want to make your sample size big enough to give it an adequate test, to adequately test the variables. In other words, give them a fair test of how good or not good that they are. And at the same time, small enough so that if you do run into a situation where they're not consistent with the market's behavior, that you're not losing a ton of money. And, how much of a sample size you take, it's kind of a toss-up. I mean, I like 20, 25 trades. And even so, if you get the first 10 trades in a row that are losers, it's like, that'd be hard to take. But, as far as I'm concerned, you should have accepted the loss. You should have accepted the possibility of losing all 20 before you even did it. And even if he didn't, say, this is a process by which I'm going to learn to accept it. This is why I'm doing it. Any other questions before I get into something else here? Boy, come on, I didn't do that good. Oh, go ahead. Wait, one second. Go ahead, Ken, go ahead.
Aren't you assuming that as a fundamental going into this, that you've tested out some system
to
verify that you do have it?
Right, yeah.
Then you can define 20 trades as being a reasonable test.
Right, yeah. Right.
You wouldn't just do it blindly.
Right. What the gentleman in the front row said, that basically you're not going to get into this blind. You're going to adequately do some back testing of these variables, or even forward testing, of these variables if you don't have the capability to back test, so that you're really not going into a blind. I mean, you're going to expect a reasonable amount of results. Even if they're really mediocre, that's not the purpose of an exercise like this, is it? It doesn't really matter. It's not the purpose. What's the purpose of an exercise like this? Yeah, change your beliefs. Create a different mindset. Sir, go ahead. Okay. Right. Yeah.
Let's assume you had a perfect test. What do you mean by random distribution of results?
Well, for me to answer that question, you have to tell me what a perfect edge is.
Well, let's say you never
tested. You never what?
You
never took a loss.
I'm giving you a completely fantastic hypothetical. One of the standards.
Well, what is it that you don't understand about the nature of a random distribution of something? If you flip a coin 1,000 times, statistically, you're going to come up with heads and tails about 50-50%, right? 50-50? That's a consistent outcome, is it not? That out of 1,000 flips, I'm going to get heads, let's say, 49% of the times and tails 51% of the times, or vice versa. That's a consistent outcome, is it not? But the outcome to each individual flip is random in relationship to the last flip, is it not? That's what I'm talking about, a random distribution between wins and losses. Okay. Yeah, right, I'm assuming a fair coin, absolutely. As long as you don't know in advance, as long as you can't determine absolutely in advance what the outcome is between one event and the next, that using the same set of variables, you've got a random distribution. If only two things can happen, win or loss, heads or tails, and you can't tell me the distribution between heads and tails of each of those 1,000 flips in advance, is it not random? No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that there's any given set of variables that you use to define an edge, that even though the variables may be exactly the same, this is a hard concept. So, don't think that what he's going through this is difficult, unless you've got a way of explaining it that I'm not. Are you asking a question? You're going to help me explain it.
No, I have a question.
Then I don't want to get, who's going to help me explain it? Go ahead.
My thought is that you can have one loss.
So if you're, you win 9 out of 10, you still have one random loss in there somewhere.
Hold on. That's probably, is that helping him or not? Go ahead.
What you're trying to find out is what's an edge. There is no such thing as being right on every trade. So the edge is being able to interpret market information in such a way that based on your research, there's a probability of one outcome being slightly greater than another outcome. Although you can't be sure that it's going to happen, but over a period of time it will happen more frequently.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Okay, go ahead. That, no, I'm not saying that at all. When you say neutral, maybe I'm not. I shouldn't. I'm sorry, I spoke too soon. Tell me what you mean by neutral. The what? The judgmental?
They have to get rid of the kind of person you are, the personality.
No, I'm not saying that at all. No, all I'm saying is that you've got to, all you've got to do is change your perspective so that you don't have the potential to define market information in painful ways. In other words, think of the contradiction. Now, I know this is very difficult because we're dealing with belief system, but think of the contradiction. If you really believe that a moment is unique and that you don't know what's going to happen next, then what does that have to do with being right or wrong?
Okay. I always think that people function in a certain way. They either process information either with facts or with intuition.
We'll talk about that in a second because there's an inherent contradiction there too. So if that's what you're trying to get into, then I'll talk about that. Maybe I can help you straighten it out. Keep in mind, the stuff we're getting into, I'm trying to give you something in a couple of hours or an hour and 45 minutes that it normally takes me 2.5 days to get through in a workshop. It really does. And I'm just, and as maybe as deep as this might sound to you, I'm still just skimming the surface. I really am. I'm serious about this. So, but again, I want you to walk away with this with you know, the best that we can do. But I said, what we do is we start out mechanically, and what you do is you trade mechanically so that you can integrate these fundamental principles into your mental system. Essentially, all I'm doing is setting up a process. Setting up a process where you will come up with conflicts with what the way you normally believe about what the market is or what trading is or the way it exists. And that if you work through the conflicts, eventually what will happen is that you will start acquiring this new belief system in which you will start interpreting market information from a more neutral perspective, meaning without fear, without stress, without anxiety. Because remember, the market doesn't generate inherently painful or pleasurable information. Those interpretations come from within inside of us. Then, once we've gone through this stage and we've learned to trust ourselves, meaning that we have learned, what we've done is we've neutralized, in essence, we have neutralized our potential to define market information in painful ways, then we can move into what I call the subjective stage of trading. And essentially, the subjective stage of trading is where you use everything you've ever learned about the market to generate your edge. In other words, whatever understanding you have about the market can determine when you get in and when you get out. So for example, I'll give you a concrete example of what I'm talking about. If someone's in the mechanical stage of trading, and I've defined right here where the risk is on this trade, okay? If you're in the mechanical stage of trading and the market does something like this, it comes up a little bit and it starts coming down, and you know what? You get a feeling that, you know, I think I'm going to get stopped out, so I'm just going to go ahead and get out now. Save myself some money. If you're in the mechanical stage of trading, I would say absolutely, categorically, don't do that. Let yourself get stopped out. If you're in the subjective stage of trading, I would say, go ahead, get out. Because what's happening is that because you're in the subjective stage of trading, assuming that this potential to define market information in painful ways doesn't exist anymore, All you're really doing is looking at market structure. And that structure in that moment, based on your knowledge of the market, is telling you that it doesn't look good. But at the same time, if you get out of that trade, now think about this. If you do get out of that trade for that smaller loss, and the market starts to reverse back in your direction, well, there's nothing going to stop you to get back in again, is there? You see, when you've got that kind of self-trust, and you're working from a relatively carefree state of mind, you'll just get back in. Now, and then what'll happen is that once you go through, you're in the subjective stage of trading, and this is where most traders really mess themselves up, is one, they're trading beyond their capabilities, meaning they trade subjectively when they should be trading mechanically. Okay? And then the worst possible situation is when you start getting genuine intuitive impulses or hunches about where the market's going to go. And this is going to probably generate a lot of questions that we're not going to have time to cover, so, but I'll do it anyway. I'll take my chance. Go ahead. Go ahead. No, I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is that from a mechanical perspective, everything is rigid. Everything is predetermined. When you're trading subjectively, you can do it any way that you want. You know where your risk is. You predefine your risk. If you don't want to put a stop in the market, you don't have to, because you know that you're going to pick up the phone without hesitation. Okay? If you can't pick up the phone without hesitation, without internal argument, then put your stop in the market. Okay? It's that simple. But all I'm saying is that you're using all of your knowledge about the nature of the market to determine what you do, as opposed to a limited set of variables. Okay? I'm not saying you know everything about the market, but you're using all that knowledge. Go ahead. Not necessarily, no. It is not. If it's your goal, that's fine. It doesn't have to be everyone's goal. There's, because it isn't necessary. And there are a lot of reasons why. There are reasons that we can't get into, because I'm not even going to talk about the potential to self-sabotage. And how that can enter into your trading, and how that can enter into your perception of information and your behavior. And what you need to do to counteract it. And there are a lot of different methods and techniques, but the point is we don't have anywhere near the time to get into it. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a goal to go from mechanical to subjective. However, most people will definitely want to aspire to that. It's just our inherent nature to do so. And the biggest reason why is because the market is an arena of endless opportunities. And it's like we can see these opportunities in every time frame, and there's just a part of us that just won't be satisfied with limiting our range of behavior in an arena that's limitless. That's basically, when we can perceive the limitlessness of it, it's very difficult to limit our range of behavior. And so we will naturally aspire to that subjective and intuitive level anyway. Go ahead. I'm doing that right now. Okay, this is going to get tough. It really is, because I have not built up the foundations to really deliver this kind of material. But I'm going to do a little bit of it anyway. Look at it this way. No, it's all right. It's fine. It's fine. It basically, he wants to know about intuitive trading. It kind of makes doing this for me kind of fun. Let's see if I can pull it off. Okay. First of all, people who explored the nature of our minds tell us that we have basically two halves of our brain where they have, in essence, kind of conflicting functions. One, the left rational part of our brain, and the right side, which is... which I'm going to call the intuitive or creative side of our mind. And these two halves are basically in conflict, because if you think about it, think about the rational part of our brain, it's like everything that's in the rational part of our mind is something that we already know. It's something that we've already experienced. But when we start getting involved with intuitive or creative information, now let's say creative information, because I don't know how many artists there are in the room, but our minds are capable of tapping into information sources that just exist out there, let's say in the universe and in the ether, and which are difficult to explain, extremely difficult, and information sources that our rational mind has a difficult time accepting. Now, if you think about the nature of creativity, by definition, creativity brings forth something that didn't previously exist. Because if it previously existed, it wouldn't be creative. So if it's something that's already inside of our rational mind, then it's not creative. But if our creative side of our brain is tapping into that information, and that is in essence what it means to sit, let's say, start trading in the zone or trading in the flow like a great athlete, because when you're in the zone, what you are, your mind, and the way you're thinking is in complete harmony with the circumstances that you find yourself in. You're in complete harmony until you're out of the zone, meaning when your rational mind wakes up and says, hey, what's going on here? I don't know, where's all this information coming from? It isn't something that's already in my brain. I don't know this. You see, so what happens? We get a hunch, we get an inspiration, we get this intuitive impulse, and that intuitive impulse will send us off into this direction. So we can go 360 degrees, can't we? In other words, I can go this direction and experience something, I can go this direction and experience something, and each one of these experiences will create some feeling, meaning some degree of satisfaction or dissatisfaction relative to what I'm trying to accomplish. Now, if my intuition sends me this way, and my rational mind starts to argue with that, and it will naturally argue with it because the information's coming from somewhere that, or something, or let's put it this way, the action of doing it is in essence inconsistent with what we already know. Well, that's the way it is with creative information. It'll always be inconsistent with what we already know. Always. Always. And so what we have to do is learn to train our rational mind to trust and accept creative information or intuitive information. And that's a whole another process, that we're not even going to begin to talk about, but we'll talk about it on the surface a little bit. So what'll happen is if my inspiration or hunch or intuition sends me off in this direction, my rational mind sort of starts arguing with that and saying, well, hey, no, this is what I know and this is the way we should be going. And then we step into this experience as opposed to this one over here. Well, this one might give us some sense of satisfaction, but we realize if we would have gone in this direction, stayed in this direction, we would have experienced 100% satisfaction. Meaning that what we did was in absolute harmony with what the environment had to offer in that moment relative to our goals. You guys with me on that? So the problem here with traders is that to some degree or another, I mean, everyone has a capability of being an intuitive trader. Everyone has the inherent capability of being an intuitive trader. Women more so than men. And that's because women operate inherently more out of the right side of their brain than men do. And as a result, women will just sort of have this sense of what's going to happen next. Or this sense about things that men simply can't grasp or understand because they're operating more out of their rational mind. And so how do men compensate for that? Is they try to make women think that they're crazy.
So in other words, we should give all our money to our wife and
then... Might not be a bad idea. So like I said, how separated you are from this creative aspect of yourself is really a function of just, how left-brained you are and how rational you have to be all the time and how you always have to know or think you know what's going to happen next. And see, what I'm about to say now is going to almost seem like it completely contradicts everything I've already said, is that when you are trading out of intuition, you are always right. By definition, or it wasn't really intuition. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that when you're trading out of your intuition, you will be right. You will know what's going to happen next. And that's really a big problem because there will be times in which you will sense that from an intuitive perspective and experience it and say, oh my. And without really understanding it, think that maybe even it has something to do with your rational thought process, which it did not. And think that you can recreate it at a rational level, which you cannot. It's something you enter into spontaneously. And you can set up the most conducive set of mental circumstances to be in it, to actually, you know, so that you do enter it spontaneously more often, but you, it's not an act of will. You can't will yourself into intuitive information. And so what happens is that you want to desperately recreate that you know, that sense of knowing. And the problem here is that what you do is you can falsely manufacture it. Your rational mind, you want it so bad that your rational mind can sort of falsely manufacture this feeling to make it feel like intuition. And that feels almost exactly like hope in many cases. Some forms of hope can feel essentially like intuition. And so what you end up doing is sabotaging your own sense of intuition. Because when you're acting out of hope, you're going to be screwed. And when you're acting out of intuition, you'll enter into the most perfect outcome. So how do you go through that? How do you eliminate that? Like I said, there are processes, but the best process is to go through one in which you eliminate all your potential for hope. If you no longer have any potential to hope that the market does anything for you, then when you do get that feeling, then you'll know that it's genuine intuition. Which brings up another point that I wanted to make. And that, if you think about what the market is, I mean, it's a collection of individuals who are trading for their own purposes, meaning that everyone wants to enrich themselves. Anybody disagree with that? Everyone gets into the market to enrich themselves? So when you think about this issue, go ahead. You said no, everything boils down to everything that anyone does in any of these markets always boils down to enriching themselves. Every act that they take, it all boils down to whether they're hedging something. When someone's hedging something, what are they trying to do? They're trying to enrich themselves by cutting their losses, right? Or by you know, making sure that they don't experience losses. And isn't that enriching yourself? So, now when you think about it, everyone puts on a trade to do that very same thing, right? Now, is it the market's responsibility to give us what we want? Think about it. You say, absolutely not. I heard a lot of absolutely nots here, okay? But, oh, absolutely. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, well. But think about this. Just think about this. Did you wake up Friday morning or Thursday morning thinking about how you were going to fulfill the dreams of other traders? How you were going to fulfill their wants, their dreams, and their desires? Did you wake up Thursday morning thinking that before you put on your trade? It didn't even occur to you, did it? And yet, think of it this way. This is the level. This is how you can gauge the level by which you want the market to do that very same thing for you. This is the level to which you can gauge how steeply your mental perspective is in, I want the market to do it for me, is the degree to which you feel betrayed when the market doesn't do what you want. If you have the potential to feel betrayal, you are abdicating your responsibility to do exactly what you need to do, when you need to do it, without hesitation. You are abdicating that responsibility to the market. You are saying to the market, you are saying to all those other participants, market, please do for me what I cannot do for myself. Please give me the money. Oh, I've done my homework. I've done my analysis. I spent 5 or 6 hours at this last night. Please just give me the money. You've got to take complete and absolute responsibility. Complete and absolute responsibility to constantly, to make never-ending, constant assessments of the risk-reward ratio in any given moment. And you've got to do it from a clear, clean, objective state of mind. And that state of mind won't exist as long as you have the potential to define and interpret market information in painful ways. It's that simple. And the way you get out of defining market information in painful ways is to integrate those five principles in your mental environment at a functional level. What I mean by a functional level, how do you know it's functional? Because you won't experience negative, won't experience any negative emotions when you go to take on and put off trades. It's that simple. You'll redefine it in a way where you take it out of an emotional, a negative emotional context. Since some of you are leaving, let me pass some of these around. I just want to pass some of these down. Oh, wait, I can't do this. So otherwise, let me spend the last maybe 15 minutes or so that we have with questions. No questions? Are we done? Really? Nobody? Go ahead. What he said is that in my book, The Disciplined Trader, I said that I had hypnosis tapes. I never really did those hypnosis tapes. And I'm kind of a perfectionist, and it took me 8 years to write The Disciplined Trader. So what ended up happening is the tapes actually turned into my second book, Trading in the Zone. Meaning that what I started out doing as tape scripts turned out to be a book. And basically, what Trading in the Zone is it's very different than The Disciplined Trader for those who have read it, and it really covers the kind of principles that we've talked about tonight in much greater detail. So that you can integrate these principles in your mental environment in a way so that they become functional. And that's basically what that book is all about. The title is exactly what it is. Trading in the Zone, How to Eliminate the Fear, Stress, and Anxiety from Your Trading. And it's only available through me. Any other questions? Oh, do I have some more? Anybody got any more? I didn't bring enough. There's some in the vendor's room over there. There's still some being passed around. Otherwise, my website is simply www.markdouglas.com, and all this stuff is on, all the product information that you need is on the website. So it's simply just the one word, markdouglas.com. And if anybody is interested in trading in the zone, I brought about 20 of them with me. So if anybody wants that, I'm only doing 1,000 of them in the limited edition manuscript form until I give it to a publisher. Any other questions? Go ahead. Opinion about what? What do you want to know? You have to be more specific. The question is my opinion about mechanical trading in relation to subjective. Okay. Responsibility of what? You said that I'm just for the tape purposes. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. That is one good thing about mechanical trading, is that when you do have a rigid set of variables that you're working with, it really does help you step back from the responsibility and learn that you are not responsible for what the market does. You are not responsible. And see, when you trade subjectively, it's difficult not to feel like you're responsible because you're putting your creative abilities on the line. But you are not responsible for what the market does. You're not responsible for these outcomes. All you're responsible for is how you react to them. No, why would that negate any of your potential? I'm not sure. You probably have a very personal question that needs to be answered that we're not going to get to here. So, any other questions? Really? We're done? If we're done, we're done. That's fine with me. Are we done? Okay, we're done. Thanks.